here we go. Namu myoho renge kyo. Thank you for being here. ever since yesterday's video upload, I made a huge boo-boo, and I erased like 366 files of images and videos, raw footage, not the raw footage, but the completed videos. I threw them all away, accidentally left a check mark where it didn't belong. So, yay. I've been trying to rebuild that. I've rescued some files, but I've lost a lot. So if the pattern and panels on the beginning and end of the video look a little different, that's why. I guess it's time for a revision. So an update. We'll call it an update. Don't call it an update. Okay, not a rapper. All right, we'll continue here with this major writing of Nichiren's. And I think you'll notice there's a shift, in a way there's a shift. It's just more more elucidation on the subject of gratitude, and the debts that we owe may not seem obvious at first. But I think one of the reasons this is an important Gosho is because what it deals with in a real everyday sense, and of course with Nietzsche in a historical sense, is the nature of cause and effect, which we hear cause and effect, cause and effect, and we think physics, right? We think action, reaction. It's not the same thing, though. You might start to think in their direct comparative way if you think of what we call a delayed reaction. Because our actions in thought, word, or deed resonate. Think of it that way. Remember, first of all, Buddhism is about the mind. But also in that discussion of the mind is the idea that everything is energy. Everything is a formation, right? This is what the Nidana is about, the 12-link causal chain. Science is investigating quantum fields right now because they're dealing with these things that appear and disappear and instantiate and annihilate and all the different technical jargon. But it's all the same thing that Buddha was talking about almost 3,000 years ago. Everything that we perceive in our mental state of samsara is constantly in flux, constantly changing. We, as human beings, like the idea of things sticking around. So every time we perceive something, we want to make it permanent, whether it's a thought, an idea, an emotion, a possession. Everything is a possession to samsaric mind, right? Ooh, I have this. Ooh, I have this, right? Constantly doing that. That's what the monkeys are doing. What's harder to perceive is that those very thoughts, those ideas, those mental activities are causes. And because they're causes, they instantiate an effect. Now, it may be impossible for us in our human mind to perceive the effect of the causes of our thoughts and ideas, our mental states, but they're there. So Nichiren is breaking down, as you've seen already, and he's going to continue to do so in various ways to demonstrate to his audience now are Lotus Sutra practitioners. So this Gosho is about deepening their understanding, right? Our understanding. And he's going to show throughout history how the actions of whether Jikaku was influenced unduly or whether he participated in shifting the school to another focus, how much of his ego was involved, how much of it was his just acceptance from other authoritarian sources, that whole mixture. He's not bothering with trying to dissect it entirely, but what he is showing by his story of how all these events are happening together is this cumulative energy, this cumulative movement, which on the one hand shows the dangers of not understanding cause and effect, but also in the scope of the title of this Gosho, shows that these kinds of actions occur when we forget or we put aside the respect and dignity we owe to that which we drew knowledge from. It kind of reminds me of I visited the Macaw Indian Reservation up in the northwest United States. In fact, I met the oldest matriarch of the tribe when I was up there. She taught me how to do a dance. It was an amazing experience. Anyway, story for another time. My point is, their whole bloodline may have ended because she was pretty old when I met her. Point is, this was a tribe of people who had profound respect. And you hear this story from indigenous peoples all over the world, but they had a profound respect for the ocean. They were right there on the shore. They were a seafaring tribe. And they would go out on boats and to catch whales at the time. It's a known practice. I know it means all sorts of different political things now, but then when they caught a whale, it was life for the entire tribe for a year. They used the blubber to make oils to put in their lamps so they could have light in the evening. They used the skins to make shoes and dresses, and the women would chew on the skin to make it softer, the leathers of it, the meat to feed, and then they would salt it so it would preserve it. I mean, the whole tribe was involved in this hunt, and the hunters, the brave men who would go out day after day trying to capture a whale, to succeed or to give them the courage and the stamina to and the opportunity to succeed in catching a whale. They would go out before the sunrise and swim out into the ocean and dive and come up and spit water into the air as a little ritual dance, if you will, to encourage the powers of the ocean and the sky and the great raven, right, to have a successful hunt. With tremendous respect, they didn't do it as any kind of a. It wasn't just an empty ritual. In other words, they truly, truly respected and wanted the ocean and life to continue and to support their efforts to feed the tribe and themselves, and on and on and on. But this was a display of tremendous respect. It wasn't just a prize to be had, it was a prize for life that was taken from and respected of the ocean. And you know, that kind of thinking, that kind of cultural identity, very profound cellular kind of belief or way of living. This was just how you grew up. It wasn't questioned. This was what you had to do. You had to know your place in the world. And so when Nichiren talks about these issues of debts of gratitude, this is what he's trying to say. And he's not only showing where that kind of dignity has been betrayed by these people, but you should also make note that he's also demonstrating the repercussions of people who've long since passed, who started the ball rolling on a destructive path. Right? Because he's talking about Chikaku's teachers and their teachers, right? This is hundreds of years of evidence. and history. And so Nitrin, in his brilliant scholarship, he can pick out all of these points along a certain path and demonstrate, look, this guy has no respect, but look, he learned it. He learned how to not have respect from his teachers and their teachers. This is important. This indicates to us how, you know, I get the question a lot when people chant for a certain amount of times, why aren't things changing? You may not know, and I guarantee you, you do not know how profoundly things may be shifting and changing in your life. We're such an immediate creature that we only perceive what's in our face. And every now and again, we understand or we perceive that, wow, things are different. Let me think about this. And we can put our own lineage together of that was about the time I started to think really differently, or things started to happen differently, or this kind of obstacle. Wow, I haven't had that kind of obstacle in forever. It's subconscious, if you want to speak of consciousness as a samsaric awareness. But consciousness, as we're practicing Buddhism, we understand is far deeper than that. I hope you understand that. So again, there's this duality. This is what we're walking in Buddhism, the duality between samsaric reality and real reality. What's really going on? And how many veils of misunderstanding and misinformation are in your way is hard to see as we're squinting and trying to see through it. We're really caught up in it, right? And some of those blinds are blackout blinds, the kind you put on daylight so that you can sleep during the day, right? Same thing with your mind. So, blah, blah, blah. With all that said, let's continue. He's not through talking about Jikaku. You know, be that as it may, he may have learned a lot of bad behaviors, but he's no slouch when it comes to making his own, right? Especially when it comes to disparaging the Lotus Sutra. It's like every time he opens his mouth, he's making things worse for him and everyone who follows that branch of thinking. So he goes on. He was like a bat, for a bat resembles a bird, yet it is not a bird, and resembles a mouse, yet it is not a mouse. Or he was like an owl or a hakai beast. He ate his father, the Lotus Sutra, and devoured his mother, those who embraced the Lotus Sutra. When he dreamed that he shot down the sun, it must have been a portent of these crimes. Now that makes more sense, doesn't it? Remember that story of, I had a dream that I shot down the sun, I must be right. In what twisted imagination does that sound right? So Nitrin points out, don't forget cause and effect, don't forget. This stance that he took it's like poison, right? It's not what it seems to be, not what he says. Jikaku seems to, what Nitrin is showing one way that fallacy may have affected his future acts, working against the Lotus Sutra and the believers or embracers, those who would practice Tendai at the time, right? And it must have been because of these acts that after his death, no grave was set aside for him. Isn't that interesting? Without even going into the politics, the circumstances, why a grave may not have been dug for him, it's not important. Just look at the facts. No grave was, and you know, the Japanese took death very seriously. So for him, this very political, well-known teacher, monk, to not have a grave dug for him. If that's all you knew about him, you'd say, wow, that was a serious disrespect, right? But Nietzsche points that out that it's not surprising given the causes he made throughout his life. You understand? The temple Onoji, representing Chisho's branch of the Tendai school, fought incessantly with the temple Enryaku-ji on Mount Hiei, which represented Jikaku's branch of the school. The two going at each other like so many asuras and evil dragons. First, Onjo-ji was burned down, then the buildings on Mount Hiei. I mean, talk about civil war, internal war, right? And it wasn't just the monks who took on this activity, these causes, right? But they had their own samurai at their behest. So this was super ugly. As a result, the image of Bodhisattvas Maitreya that had been special objects of devotion of the great teacher Chisho, was burned, and the special object of devotion of the great teacher Chikaku, as well as the great lecture hall on Mount Hiei, was likewise burned down. The priests of the two temples must have felt as though they had fallen into the hell of incessant suffering while they were still in this world. Ah, yes, that's the point. You don't experience hell after you die. You're no longer you. You don't experience anything. Hell is here to be experienced. From simply living unenlightened and ignorant lives about our Buddha nature, life is suffering, to actively working against enlightenment by teaching erroneous things and behaving in this manner. Tell me that's not hell. Only the main hall of Mount Hiei remains standing. The lineage of the great teacher Kobo has likewise ceased to be what it should have been. Kobo left written instructions that no one who had not received the precepts at the ordination platform established by Ganshin at the Todaiji should be allowed to become a head of Toji Temple. The retired emperor Kampyo, however, founded a temple in Kyoto called Ninaji and moved a number of monks from Toji to staff it. And he also issued a decree clearly stating that no one should be allowed to reside in Ninaji unless he had received the precepts of the perfect and immediate enlightenment at the ordination platform on Mount Hiei. You remember now, I will remind you that the immediate enlightenment, the precepts of perfect and immediate enlightenment, are the ordination platform originally set up by Tendai. And as Nichiren points, the source of the 3,000 realms teaching, which is firmed up or encapsulated utterly in the lifespan chapter of the Lotus Sutra. So all of this perfect immediate enlightenment, the teaching that you're always hearing is that our Buddha nature already exists, all we need to do is enlighten it, and that is what this perfect and immediate enlightenment is about. So understand, words can lead you astray, so I want to make sure you understand these are all the same thing. As a result, the monks of Toji are neither disciples of Ganjin nor those of Kobo in terms of the precepts, because this ruler just subverted all of that. He started his own temple and hired monks to come and populate it. This isn't how transmission is done. This isn't how we train our, right? If you opened a store on the corner to sell whatever, sundry items, and you went to the local Walmart and you made 20 employees a better deal pay-wise, which from what I hear wouldn't be difficult, and they all came to work for you, you couldn't suddenly say that you were Walmart. So this is what Nietzsche is pointing out. And just because you open a store and you steal some employees doesn't suddenly make you Walmart. Not that I'm setting up Walmart to be anything, but you understand the example, right? They are Dengyo's disciples. However, they do not behave like true disciples of Dengyo. They turn their backs on the Lotus Sutra, which Dengyo considered to be supreme. Right? They're no Walmart. Excuse me. I think my candles are burned out. Continuing. Kobo died on the 21st day of the third month in the second year of Jowa era, 835. And the imperial court sent a representative to offer prayers at his funeral. Later, however, where are we time-wise? His disciples gathered together and, bent on deception, announced that he had not died at all, but had entered a state of deep meditation. And some of them even claimed that he had had to shave his head because his hair had grown long. Others asserted that while he was in China, he had hurled a three-pronged diamond pounder all the way across the ocean to Japan. Wow. That in answer to his prayers, the sun had come out in the middle of the night, that he had transformed himself into the thus come one Mahavarajana. Magical thinking. Or that he had instructed the great teacher Dengyo in the 18 paths of esoteric Buddhism. So let's get rid of Dengyo's supremacy and just claim our own, right? Thus, by enumerating their teacher's supposed virtues and powers, they hoped to make him appear wise, in this way lending support to his false doctrines and deluding the ruler and his ministers. And also, politically putting them in a situation of great favor, right? We've been doing this all along. We're the true Buddhists. In addition, on Mount Koya, there are two main temples, the original temple and Denbo-in. The original temple, which includes the great Padaitya, was founded by Kobo and is dedicated to the thus come one Mahavarachana, to the womb realm. The temple called Denbo-in was founded by Shokaku-bo and is dedicated to the Mahavarachana of the diamond realm. Oh, so there's different Mahavarachanas. Of course, because these are emanations of Shakyamuni describing different paths, different ways of attaining our own Buddha wisdom, to see our Buddha-ness. These two temples fight with each other day and night in the same way as Onjiji at the foot of the Mount Hiei and then Rakuji on top of Mount Hiei. Was it the accumulation of deceit that brought about the appearance in Japan of these calamities? You see how Nichiren he's making an example and he's using dates to impress upon people that the repercussions of our actions, our thoughts, if they go unchecked, if they're continued through other voices, there's no limit to how much. In other words, if you walk up to the great ocean and you say, I have this little barrel of poison here. It costs me way too much money to send it to a plant where they can, make it non-toxic and take care of it. I'll just, take it out in the canoe and dump it here. Look how big the ocean is. It won't hurt anything. But this poison, not only will it hurt the fishermen, the vacationers, people who swim, it'll affect the water, certainly in that area. But more profoundly, the idea of what he's done will spread to others. Even if he just talks about it in secret, a couple of people he knows, they will spread it. The story will become folklore. It will spread throughout hundreds of years after that person's death. And the practice of dumping things in the ocean as long as nobody's looking will be accepted as a way to do things. Until masses of people are made sick or die and somebody makes the association at some point, how much disaster has to happen before people together change their consciousness about this karma and begin to address it? You can occupy centuries of civilizations with the task of cleaning up the causes that one person has made. It's quite an example, and it's from their history. He's not making stories, right? He's telling a story, but he's telling a story from fact. So, again, this is kind of the ipso facto. If you have proper respect and dignity for the sources of the teachings that exalt your Buddha-ness, enable you to attain Buddha-ness, this is only proper if you claim to be a Buddhist who would propagate these teachings. You become more of simply a vessel. You allow this great teaching to come through you and help others. See how different that is? If your ego and your arrogance says that I'm learning this teaching for me, and I then am going to teach it as I will to others, you're interrupting the flow. This is very profound now. To understand with humility how amazing this practice is, and how clearing our mind and our Buddha mind, quieting the monkeys and becoming awakened, is so much beyond. Remember the self, the ego, all of this? This is a temporary, fleeting thing. Buddha is interminate. It is the process of life which has gone on for 40 billion some years in this universe. You're just this little tiny instantiation within it. And your entire gift in life is that you can actually perceive it. You can get in the flow. Now, if you want to be truly amazed by that life that you have, help somebody else understand it. Help somebody else come to it. In any little way that you show this massive expanse of life process and the amazement of it to someone else and go, look, you have this too. No, I'm not giving it to you. It's not me who understands Buddha-ness. I understand my own, and I have my own struggles to, in this life, in this samsaric mentality, to see it, to experience it. But oh, brother, oh, sister, look, you too, find yours. Do you see the humility in that? And if you read carefully Nichiren, this is exactly what he does. He isn't saying, I, Nichiren, am Buddhism. Only I know. No. He's saying, look at the scholarship. You know. You can know. You can refuse to know. But that's you getting in the way. It's there. I'm pointing to it. I'll go back to the emperor's new clothes. When the little kid says, the emperor is naked, he didn't go undress him. He just pointed it out. That kid's a hero. Although he may incur the wrath of those around him who'd rather just go with the flow, right? But it's not him who's at fault. It's the emperor. So, Nichiren is a great pointer at the obvious facts, the truth of what Buddhism is. He's not claiming, he's always talking about in a very humble way. He's just a man, just as I am, just as you are, just a man or a woman. I'm not going to get into the identification thing, but you're a human, right? And humans have this fallacy that everything around them is important. But it's not what's around you that's important. It's your perception of what's around you. And what's around you, every single thing is a representation of that momentary manifestation of this huge life process. That should be humbling. You want to make something of your humble little position? Show it to somebody else. Bodhisattva. But this isn't what Jigoku did. These guys are burning each other's temples down. What do you think that you possess? What do you think that you own that makes you do things counter to life? You see, life unaffirming. Their actions are completely deluded. Nichiren goes on. Yeah, we can go a bit further. You may pile up dung and call it sandalwood. But when you burn it, it will give off only the odor of dung. That's pretty drop the mic, right? You may pile up a lot of great lies and call them the teachings of the Buddha, but they will never be anything but a gateway to the great citadel of the hell of incessant suffering. You're not damaging Buddha or Buddha-ness or awakening. You're damaging your own experience of life. You're just, and others. And this is where it gets really, really bad. You want to go to hell or be in hell or experience life as a torture. Well, I'd rather you didn't. But that's your life. That's your cause. That's your karma. I would like to help you change it. But unless you're willing to do the work, right? The stupa built by Nigratha Jnaptaputra over a period of several years conferred a great benefit upon living beings. But when Bodhisattva Sashvakosha bowed to it, it suddenly collapsed. The Brahmin demon eloquent, now this is obviously from a much larger, and there's a footnote on this, a much larger, again, one of those inculcated stories of the culture there. And you can research it for yourself. I'm sure, though, you can already guess what it's going to be about. But by all means, that's how I started studying. Every time there was a footnote that caught my eye, I would deep dive into there until I was satisfied I understood the point. So I leave that to you. The Brahmin demon eloquence taught from behind a curtain for a number of years succeeded in fooling others. But Bodhisattva's Ashvaghosha berated him and exposed his falsehoods. Do any of you remember the Wizard of Oz? The guy behind the curtain? You think he had a precedent? The non-Buddhist teacher, Luka, turned himself into a stone and remained in that form for 800 years. But when Bodhisattva Dignaga berated him, he turned into water. Oops. The Taoist priest, for several hundred years, deceived the people of China. But when they were rebuked by the Buddhist monks Kashyapa Matanga and Chu Falan, they burned their own scriptures that purported to teach the way of the immortals. And those of you who are fans of Bodhidharma, take note. Just as Chao Kao seized control of the country and Wang Mang usurped the position of emperor, so the leaders of the True Word School deprived the Lotus Sutra of the rank it deserves and declared that its domain belongs instead to the Mahavacharana Sutra. If the monarch of the law has been deprived of his kingdom in this manner, can the monarch of the people hope to remain peaceful and unharmed? Look around you, right? Japan today is filled with followers of Jigoku, Chisho, and Kobo. There is not a single person who is not a slanderer of the law. Even though they will all point to their leaders as, well, it's their fault, they choose to go along. So ultimately, again, in Buddhism, everything, your enlightenment is up to you. You can't point to any other source to excuse your non-enlightenment. What the hell is that anyway? right? If we stop to consider the situation, it is very much like what prevailed in the latter day of the law of the Buddha Great Adornment, or the latter day of the law of the Buddha All-Bright King. Again, the footnote. In the latter day of the law of the Buddha Awesome Sound King, even though people repented of their wrongdoings, they still had to suffer for 1,000 kalpas in the Avicii Hell. Consequences are sometimes very hard to expiate. Right? It's just like when you know you've done something. You know, look, you stole a cookie out of the cookie jar. Okay, bad. You know, bad on you. Do you repent? Do you change your ways and you never steal anything ever again? Or do you, well, I got away with it. It's just one cookie. So every now and again, another cookie. Every now and again, take some money out of your wallet. I'm not taking much. Every now and again, you've justified and you've planted the seeds of dishonesty, thievery, deception, lying. It's all in there, right? So if one day you get arrested for shoplifting and you go to jail for a while, who's to blame? Are you going to be mad at the authorities because they caught you? Oh, I didn't do anything wrong. I just got caught. Right? How many times do we hear that? That's a stubborn willingness to hang on to poison. Wrong thinking. So this is what Nichiren is pointing out here, is that I'm talking about stealing a cookie and petty theft, but what if that turns into taking a life? What if that turns into justification for driving like a madman and killing a family on the side of the road because you lost control of your vehicle? These things are all related, but the consequences are equatable with the cause. Sorry, my nose is itching me, sorry. Right? I mean, this is why I said at the beginning of this video, much of what we're going to read here is cause and effect. The cause, the subject of this letter, is respect. Respect given. A debt of gratitude owed. It's not just that the respect is given, it's that the idea of the life-giving and profundity of what you respect is such that it penetrates and is part and parcel of your life. That's why it's an ode. It's an active mental conscious effort to respect as what it is, what it is performing for you in your life, your enlightenment, and to allow it, to promote it, to continue beyond you. This is why it's a debt owed, a debt of gratitude owed. It's an ongoing stream, right? Same idea. The true word teachers, the followers of the Zen school, and the priests of the Nembutsu, you know, Amida Buddha, show not the slightest sign of repentance in their heart. They still see themselves as superior, right? Can there be any doubt that, as the Lotus Sutra says, quote, they will keep repeating this cycle for a countless number of kalpas. So if you continue to do the wrong thing, aren't you deepening the effect, making it last longer? That's kind of heavy, isn't it? Because Japan is a country where the correct teaching is slandered, heaven has abandoned it. In other words, All positive energies that could kind of catch you in the midst of making an error. And we've all felt that in different situations. Whew, glad I didn't go that way. Whew, I don't know what it was, but I thought I shouldn't. Right? That's what he's talking about. Our external to our samsaric knowledge. Because as an awakened Buddhist, our surrounding area is us. So if we make good causes, we are affected by good causes around us. That's heaven. And because heaven has abandoned it, the various benevolent deities who had passed in the past guarded and protected the nation have burned their shrines and returned to the capital of tranquil light. So those opportunities, they're still there. Life process is what it is. But you've repelled the positive life affirming in your own life and therefore in your environs. So it's a plummeting kind of behavior and effect, right? You're making it harder to come to recover. This is why it lasts so long. Now there is only I, Nichiren, who remain behind, announcing and giving warning of these things, pointing. But when I do so, the rulers of the nation treat me like an enemy. Of course, we kind of are. You're not letting them be happy in their misery. People by the hundreds curse me and speak ill of me, attack me with staves and sticks, swords and knives. Door after door is closed to me. House after house drives me away. And when the authorities find that even such treatment does not stop me, they intervene in the matter. Twice they've sent me into exile, and once, on the 12th day of the 9th month of the 8th year of Bun'en, 1271, they very nearly cut off my head. That's a Noguchi, you know. The Sovereign King's Sutra says, quote, because evil people are respected and favored, and good people are subjected to punishment, marauders will appear from other regions, and the people of the country will meet with death and disorder. Well, anybody, Buddhist or not, who reads the history of Japan around this time knows that it was constant chaos. Not only were they at each other's throats, but then the Mongols were invading and taking over parts of Japan and kind of laughing at the Japanese for being so disorganized and at their own throats that they just took advantage and came in and took over stuff, right? And they were coming fresh off their wins in China, which was no different. Where are we time-wise? I'm going to wrap this video up here. But I hope you're getting the sense here that Nichiren is desperately trying to get the people of his day to open their eyes to what's actually happening. Not that he wants to arm them to the teeth and fight back in war. He never suggests that, right? Although you and I might think that for a moment, because we're Western, we live in an empire state, you know, that just takes what they want, seemingly, without regard to other cultures, other countries, so on and so forth. Authoritarianship is very, very much the in vogue, if you will, today, if you look across the world governments. In fact, I think I'm going to stop right there, because that's a good stopping point. He now is going to quote the Great Collection Sutra and others. So he's going to continue to try to make his point that he's not trying to overthrow the government or the current Buddhist authorities. He's merely pointing to the teachings themselves and saying, there's a huge disparity between what Shakyamuni is saying and what these people are doing. They're not honoring their debt of gratitude to Shakyamuni. And consequently, their behaviors are abhorrent. And they're and look at the consequences, not just in their lives, but in our country. Look at what you're suffering. Understand why it is you're suffering it. Not because they did a bad thing, but because you got on the ride. You committed to go along with them, whether it's from fear or position or avarice, whatever, maybe all of those things. But you cannot allow yourself to do that. You should do what Shakyamuni taught us, even if you have to do it in secret. This is your Buddha-ness, your life experience. You should be willing. The gratitude should be so strong within you that you're willing to lay down your life and let these idiots, these evils of current force and authority, quote unquote. Their authority comes from violence and lies. Your authority comes from truth. Without it, what good is your life? You're just going to suffer anyway. Find your truth. Your truth is in Myoho Renge Kyo. This will awaken your door to see your truth. And it is only yours. And if you want to egg on that process, have the courage to show someone else. Give them a peek that they too can do this. That will launch you. You'll feel it physically. Mind, body, remember? All right. So with all of that, thank you again for being here. I appreciate you guys. We're getting new subscribers all the time. And now I'm going to go see what tatters my hard drive is in so that I can put together this video. I hope it comes out okay, and I'll see you soon in the next one. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you. Don't forget the podcasts.